Welcome to our first show of Meeting Pros. I'm your host, Kevin Finn, and in the studio with me today is my good buddy and co-host, Taylor Kelly, and we have our trusted advisor, Jessica Park. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful.
Good, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Any news in your guys' world? Anything interesting?
I did have something very interesting happen just a couple hours ago. I went and had breakfast with my good friend, Shaquille O'Neal. And that's fairly sarcastic. I did run into Shaquille at Waffle House.
The classy Waffle House.
And had my picture taken with him, and I'm now his biggest fan, and he knows it.
How about you, Jessica?
I actually had a great business-to-business experience this morning also. I needed a product from a vendor, like in a pinch, because I was using it for, my pastry chef was using it for an item I'm making this weekend. And the business was willing to drive 45 minutes near an hour to come and meet me and bring me the product personally because I didn't have time to have it shipped. And then when I met this morning, I met this person that owns the company at Waffle House, and it's a 12-year-old entrepreneur that runs this company. And he coordinated with me. He had his parents bring him to meet me, so I had the product for my event this weekend, and it was just the coolest thing. Wow.
That is absolutely adorable, and we learned that Waffle House is the place to do business in Atlanta.
Get the All-Star Special. So, can't go wrong.
So we're kicking off the show, and on the show we interview different meeting planners, and Taylor and I, we don't have much meeting planner experience, but back in college we did used to get a couple kegs, some hunch punch, and we'd charge at the door, and we had a beer pong table, and that went pretty well, so we're pretty qualified to do this show, but just because we wanted to make sure we got everything, our ducks in a row, we brought in the expert, Jessica Parks. And she actually has a guest with her today. I believe it is, I'm going to try not to butcher this, like I said, Tony Mosheri. And also in the studio with us, we have Timothy Burkesh. Did I get that right, guys?
No, you got it right.
Tim is fine.
Okay, Tim is fine.
Tony's fine, too.
Okay, good. All right. So, Jessica, would you like to introduce us to your guest today?
Yeah, I would love to. This is Tony Mosheri with Mosheri Management, and I have known Tony for some time now, and I've told her personally that she is a business mentor of mine. Her company has done great things here in Atlanta, and I secretly watched her company before I even met her, and I'm very excited to have her here today to be able to interview her and ask her a few questions about her business. How did you fall into this career, Tony?
I fell into this career back in Detroit. I was out of college, and I started working at the Advanced Engineering Building for General Motors and was working on some of their meetings that were, back then they used to call it bi-directional live, so you had to do all this logistics to get, like, Tokyo, Detroit, New York to be all on the same call. Mm-hmm. That's what they used to call it, bi-directional live. And I really fell into the logistics of it. And the two gentlemen that I worked for said, okay, you have two things. One, we don't think you should be here because you're doing too well of a job. And two, when you're done with, you know, this year's over, we're going to have you do something else. But I always knew that events with the logistics I did like, and I knew that that was my calling. But I did a few things after I left General Motors and ended up in Atlanta and decided one day on a whim, you know what, I'm going to start my own business.
Well, did you find any trouble starting a business? Was that hard, especially in Atlanta, being a young woman?
Yeah, not only being young, I also was a single mother. Wow. And it was very difficult for me to have a full-time normal job. And the demands of working 60 hours a week back then, I said, I just can't do this. So I literally took $1,000 out, and I said, I'm going to do this one event, which I just created an event and did it. And it was, it went beyond my expectations. And from that, I reached out to my entire network that I kept in touch with and said, this is what I'm doing now.
Was it pretty hard for you to build your clientele and stuff in the beginning? Like, how hard was it to get off the ground and get started and everything?
It was very hard because I didn't know anybody in Atlanta. Yeah. And I moved from a city that I knew everybody, which, just coming from Detroit, I just grew up there. So I'm like, great, this is the hardest thing I'm ever going to do. Right. But I started a networking event back then and nobody knew who I was. And it ended up that the networking event ended up attracting most high-level executives, and those high-level executives were giving me references saying, you need to do this once a month because it's really where people are coming. Mm-hmm. And I did it, the building across from WSB on Peachtree, which has been a couple other things, mm-hmm. but I did it in the atrium, the networking event, and I got a wine purveyor to give the wine for free, and I got a dessert person to give all the desserts for free, and those people made contacts. So it really didn't cost me anything, and then we charged, we used to call it 20 for 20. So we had 20 hosts that helped me, and they would invite 20 of their friends, and we gave $20, they paid $20 at the door, and we didn't get the money. We just kept it for our networking events that kept growing.
Well, you have to let us in on your secret, because at Business Radio X, we love free more than anything. How do you get people to donate free stuff to you? You're like, hey, I'm starting out. Give me these free stuff. How do you do that?
When they say that's your problem and, you know, everybody starts out somewhere, I'm like, well, I wouldn't take no for an answer.
Don't take no
for
an answer?
I just kept calling and calling until somebody said yes.
Wow. So what advice would you give a young budding entrepreneur in your field? Networking advice, because that seems like it's the most important thing.
Yeah, because before social media, it was networking. And I believe that most young people don't really consider the live face-to-face relationships and networking when you're meeting. But I really do advise to keep in touch with everybody you meet, because you never know when you're going to need one of those people.
So I can't just text people back and forth?
No. No, the texting, I do text, but I still don't understand the younger generation, younger than me, that they choose only to network either by email or text messaging, which I think, Tim, you would agree that really in our generations didn't work so well.
No, but it's amazing, because I have a young son and he's 15, and I don't think he ever uses the phone to actually call anybody. He's texting and emailing all the time.
Yeah.
We don't have any minutes. We don't care. We don't need any minutes.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Tony, do you feel like the industry's changed a lot since whenever you got started?
Yeah. I was mostly in the medical sector. That's where I really concentrated, and it was a little niche. That medical sector is definitely changing, because the AvaMed rules are changing, and AvaMed rules dictate sponsorship and the physicians that I was working with, what they were able to do and what they couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And definitely in the last 3 years, it's been detrimental to the medical industry. And I think, Tim, you know.
Yes.
What are these rules? Just for our listeners.
The rules are that
what can we not do?
These doctors really can't engage with any product people necessarily.
Wow.
So that would be like in any industry. You can't talk to anybody. You can no longer speak about their products. You have to disclose everything. You have to really not be friends with people that you communicate with that you're buying products from. So from that, industry pulled all the money that they were giving for events for doctors to learn continuing medical education and also to network, and they said that the doctors were getting too close to the products. So the business basically went from, I would say, several thousand medical meetings going on around the country to several hundred that are basically educational base from a American college of something.
How do you work around that and make those events interesting?
When I was involved with them, which is since the industry's changing, you really get the key opinion leaders within the industries to speak on things that the other people that are in that sector want to hear about, or what's coming up in, you know, trials that are going on, and what people want to hear if their next best heart pill is going to work better than something else. And then all of these medical companies compete for your listening to and educating yourself.
What has been your biggest challenge so far?
My biggest challenge was when I grew one meeting. It was called Interventional Cardiology. I grew that meeting from less than 200 attendees to close to over 5,000 attendees, which it moved to Vegas. And I was about 33 years old negotiating with MGM. And really, they actually wrote me a letter saying that I really, back in those days, really negotiated hard to get everything I could possibly get when I really didn't know how to negotiate with a big casino. And they didn't like doctors' meetings anyway, because they said the doctors weren't really in the casinos. They were actually in the educational meetings. So like that, the challenge was working with them and getting them to say yes, because that's clearly where people wanted to go in the spring, people from all over the United States. I, you know, sent out a questionnaire and asked, where do you want this meeting to move? And 90% of them said, move it to Vegas.
Wow.
So, and then I got a lot of casinos said, no, we don't. We're booked. And then I'm like, you're not booked. You just don't want to give me the...
No for an answer.
Right, right. And I go, really, you're discriminating. And then that led to one other thing. They're like, oh, we better give this girl a meeting space.
Yes. All right. Sorry. So I got to ask you a question. Like, what is it that sets you apart from everybody else that does this? Because, I mean, I was looking over some of your highlights, and, I mean, you were top 15 to watch in 2005, named top 30 under 30 when you moved to Atlanta. Just what is it that makes you, like, the best? You know, what is it that you think, why would people want to employ Tony Moshiri?
I've been told, I'm not reading my own press release. I've been told that definitely I'm an engaging person. I really do care about the people around me. It's not just about me. It's about the people that I work with. And I'm selling a team. I'm not just selling me. And I think people recognize that. There's a lot of women that I have been around that really don't help other women bring them through the ranks of whatever careers they're in. And I learned that from... at General Motors. Originally, my mentors were these two women that there weren't that many women at the Advanced Engineering Building, and they said, just do not take no for an answer and keep sticking to your ground and what you want. And really, I do believe that that set me apart by
definitely
keeping that in my mind.
Yeah.
For me, it did.
And I'm sure...
Oh, thanks, Jessica.
And I'm sure it really helps to just, you know, love what you're doing, too, also. So
yeah, you got to love what you do every day. It might not always be easy, but you got to love what you do.
Can you speak to the teaming aspect of event planning a little bit? Because I know that's a huge aspect of it.
Yeah. I basically, it was one employee at a time. There was a person that worked for me for 9 years. She was a Stanford graduate. She was working for one of the consulting companies, and she kept reading about me, and she said, I want to work with you. And she didn't say, I want to work for you. I want to work with you. And I said, well, I'm not really hiring right now, and I can't afford you. And she's like, oh, no, I'm going to take a pay cut because I really want to see what you're doing. I really always want to do this, even though I'm a Stanford graduate and got an MBA in business. It's not what I want. So she was really one of my biggest assets because we were the yin and yang. She was very conservative, and I'm the girl that didn't say no to anything. She's like, oh, no, we got to change things. Mm-hmm. But it was one employee at a time that knew it was different from me that I hired, because I knew that hiring the same of everybody doesn't work.
Everybody's got to bring something different to the table.
Oh, definitely. People have to disagree with you. You're not going to grow if they don't.
You can't always be right.
Right. Well, and you learn from everybody else. You know, I learned from some of the younger people that I hired.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. See, younger people know what they're talking about sometimes, too.
Yeah,
definitely.
Definitely, well, in the social media aspect now, and the whole internet thing, they can get it down
quickly. And that's huge now, too. It really is.
Who would have thought, right?
I know, right?
That tweeter thing, whatever that is.
Who would have thought? All we were used to was picking up the phone and calling somebody, right, Tim?
Leaving a message, and they'd write on a pink slip while you were out.
Then they'd mail you back the response 7 days later.
And they got thrown away when the guy came back to the office. So, yeah. It was fun.
Well, Tony, what's next for you? Like, you've done all these things, all these accomplishments. What is next for the great Tony Moshiri?
I don't know about great. No, you know, I'm really branding TonyMoshiri.com. I'm reinventing myself. I decided that I have my hands in a lot of different pockets right now, but definitely one of my passions is helping other people, younger people, mostly younger women, so that I can help navigate and mentor them to reach the highest in their careers. Because for me, it was a lot of glass ceilings, and I see those glass ceilings being popped by younger people every day. And so after 15 years, I'm rebranding myself, because I think that's what you got to do, and you got to go with the times. And the sector that I was in went from zero to close to $4 million a year to not worth me staying in that sector. So that's why I'm reinventing myself.
So then who's the ideal person you would want to work with? Other than Business Radio X, they're off the table. That's the obvious choice.
Uh-huh. The ideal person would definitely be Oprah, because Oprah has had to reinvent herself several times. So for me, that would be someone definitely to interview if I ever could.
I'll make a call. He knows Shaq, but I know Oakley.
Speed dial.
Well, if you can just give us your contact information for our listeners so they can reach out, learn more about you and your company.
It's Tony Mosherry. You can go to www.mosherrymanagement.com. It's MOCERIMGMT.com. Like I said, I'm rebranding, but that's you get all the information to reach me from that website.
Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah. Oh, look at that. Same page.
Well, thank you. That was good.
No, yeah. It was, wasn't it? Thanks
thank
so much,
you guys.
Tony. You mind hanging out with us for just a little bit while we interview our other guests?
No, I look forward to hearing what Tim has to say.
Awesome. Okay, so as you know, we have Tim Burkesh of Vector Displays. How are you doing today, Tim?
Doing great. Thank you.
That's good. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into this, and just what made you want to get into setting up your business and doing the trade shows.
Okay, well, it evolved over years. I was and have been heavily involved in sales for most of my business career. And part of it was working with salespeople on the trade show floors at various events. We would go to trade shows and we'd see people sitting at the back of the booth drinking coffee. Back then they didn't have smartphones, but they were doing whatever they did on their phones or something. And people
Blank
would be...
Snake.
We've always been good at looking busy.
People would be walking back and forth in the aisle, and these people are being ignored, and nobody's paying attention to them. And here the company has spent anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000 to $200,000 to have a booth and staff and the food and rooms and giveaways and... Nobody's talking to anybody. So we would do training of the people who were staffing the booth. We had to change that, staffing the booth, to be a little more personable and maybe even ask some questions and provide some information and maybe get a lead or two and, follow up, heaven forbid. So it was that basic kind of stuff. And then that was one way. And then I got involved with a company that was working to... they were selling, and they still do. They sell labor on the trade show floors. Somebody will be in Vegas, and they'll put up the booth for them. They'll be in New York. They'll put up the booth for them. So that's how I got more in the nitty-gritty part of the trade show business. And then it's been about, 10 years ago, started doing a little bit of everything. So right now we do anything to do with trade shows and events. We can... we build the booths. We can ship the booths. We store the booths.
We fabricate them.
We fabricate. We provide printing. Again, working with Todd Schnick earlier about how to help people promote once they're at the show. So we do. I still do some training of people at the various shows. So we do some of everything, and also then outdoor. And outdoor is a whole new ball of wax. One of our biggest clients, as you may not believe it, is the Central Intelligence Agency. we do a 20-foot by 20-foot by 17-foot high tent for them, and we take it around to various festivals throughout the country, and they use it for recruiting new CIA agents.
Wow. They didn't recruit you yet, Tim?
No.
Are their booths classified?
As a matter of fact, I cannot show pictures of it.
Wow.
We cannot show it on our website. It's kind of my unknown client, and I can only talk about it, although this will probably be edited for all I know.
It won't be by us.
That's right. So you won't hear that. You won't hear that client name on this broadcast. But but the problem is you have tornadoes in Dearborn, Michigan. We had at the Arab Festival there, and it almost ripped the tent out on a Friday night. Mm-hmm. And then we had 43 years we checked the weather in Houston in April, no problem. We go there that weekend, we had 12 inches of rain in a 24-hour period of time. So that kind of dampened the exhibit area. So outdoors is just a whole other ball of wax. But basically, and I got to tell people who have never met me, if you ever meet me, you'll see I don't have a whole lot of hair, and the hair I have is not a whole lot of color in it, and that's because we have to do all these details.
Because you're wise.
You can have a million, I don't know about that. A million things can go wrong, or a million things need to be done at any given event. And so what we do with our customers and clients is to say, we'll take care of that for you. We have our website I guess, positioned to draw a lot of foreign, non-U.S. Prospects, leads, and that's what we offer them. We do a turnkey situation. We'll say, look, you show up the morning of the show, we'll have it all set up for you. All you have to do then is do your thing. And then when they leave, we take care of it for them. And they don't have to worry about, is the carpet going to be there on time?
That's
is
awesome.
The truck going to arrive on time? Is it going to be put up in time? All that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
I'd love to hear about any initiatives you know of the green industry in Atlanta.
We're doing a whole lot, and it's doing better. It started several years ago. People talked about it big. The problem with talk is they would then say, well, okay, this is what it costs to do it the old way. This is what it costs to do the green way. And, of course, the green way was more expensive.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Then that wonderful decision maker at the top would say, oh, this green, I think that's overblown. I don't know. I don't know if we're serious about that or not.
I don't know if we're ready.
That's right. So now we do a lot of dye sublimation fabrics. They're light. The inks are now soy-based. So price competitive, they're good, and they look just as good. So that's important, obviously.
Yes.
And then we do a lot of aluminum framing and a lot of plastic, PVC kind of framing.
Okay.
So now instead of having a huge, you know, 8-foot piece of truss to take in, which some people still want truss, but you don't have to do that anymore. You can have a huge booth fit on a 4-foot by 4-foot pallet, so your shipping costs are less. That's green, using less oil, gas. Your labor cost is less because it doesn't take as long to set it up and take it down. So there's all kinds of savings now in green, and it's gonna continue.
Good.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
How has new technology affected your business? Because it's growing so fast, it's going so fast. People are trying to jump on the bandwagon, and
well, you know, we see it. I think that jump on the bandwagon because I'm in a smaller company. Let's face it, and we can do things quickly. But to get a company, just think of a huge company like IBM. I don't know who does the IBM tweets, even if IBM has a Twitter account. But I'm sure it's a major corporate decision-making had to be involved before they said, okay, do a Twitter
account.
Just make
a tweeter.
Yeah, that's right. Just do it. So even though I think it is ubiquitous in the industry to have social media, I think a lot of the larger companies still don't do it, and a lot of executives don't have any idea what's going on, especially when I see people who say, I still don't have a smartphone. I'm going, how can you live your life without a smartphone?
Exactly. Well, I'm too big for Twitter time. I Taylor make mine for me, and he manages it, so just so I can be relevant.
You do exist in the Twitter world.
Well, that's a whole other debate, too, is if a company does have an account, should they do it themselves or should they outsource that? And, of course, you get pros and cons.
Outsource, I would say.
Well, but the problem is if somebody does something dumb and
Absolutely.
It can hurt you, so that's why you still have to monitor. You know,
well,
exactly.
You can't run autopilot anymore.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But Jessica's a professional.
You have to read through it several times before you post it. Typos are really
and don't even get me started on texting and no punctuation.
I know.
It still drives me up the wall and no punctuation. I'm going, this is a professional, and emails with no punctuation. I'm going, this is a professional. Okay, but that's my family.
Yeah.
I'm an old guy. Okay, that's my bad.
So I want to hear, sounds like you probably have some cool or crazy stories about stuff that's happened
in
your world.
Oh, yeah. There's always kind of fun things. Well, I mentioned the weather, and then it's just the interest of working with a diverse type of people that you have to get in sync. And the first time it happened, I had a Japanese customer, Kubota, which makes Kubota tractors and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. This was a water pump division. They make industrial water pumps. And it was a 20-foot by 20-foot booth. The person I was dealing with was Chinese, but she was in Tokyo. And we did everything through email and not even a phone call. And, of course, her English was a whole lot better than my, you know, Chinese or Japanese, so we didn't even try that. You know, she would communicate with me in English, and I could tell it was – you know, there was some translation going on in some software. But then, you know, they came to that booth. They showed up that, I think it was a Tuesday morning here in Atlanta, and they were just happy as could be with that booth being set up. And, here, you know, we were a half a world away and all done through email. Just unreal.
Wow.
So customer service, it gets you every time.
Well, the nights I stayed awake wondering, well, what if they don't like this?
What
you know,
if,
and
what if?
Yeah, that's right.
So I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Do most of these companies, whenever they come to you, I mean, do they already have an idea of kind of what they want, or they just say, look, we need a trade show booth, set us up? I mean, you know, how do y'all usually do that?
Yeah, first of all, they usually have the space, or not usually, they know what their space is. So whether it's a 10 by 10, 20 by 20, 30 by 45, or whatever, they pretty much have that in mind. Usually when they go that large, larger ones, it's not the first time they've exhibited. So they have an idea of what they want to do with the booth, what they want to show, that kind of thing. Sometimes they will send plans over, and they'll say, what would it cost to do this in Las Vegas? And then we do a proposal and work
see
it
what
from
you
there.
Can do it for
and
it,
yeah, and it still goes, there's still money involved. I mean, it's still... There it's more of a generic because they assume that everybody will do the same thing. Mm-hmm. But then where we're different is we can do the turnkey. We'll say we'll include the cost of the drayage, which is getting the components from the dock, the shipping dock, to the booth. There's a charge for that. Mm-hmm. We'll take care of making sure there's electricity where it needs to be in the amount you need it, and that costs money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it all has to be figured out ahead of time.
I'm sure they like that, you know, knowing that they can just sit back and not have to worry about a single thing, and you know, you'll take care of everything for them.
And you don't want any surprises the day of the event either,
no,
so you're better
sure.
in doing it yourself.
Well, that's what they'll say. They'll say, well, I've got somebody doing the carpet, and I've got somebody else doing the lights, and I'm thinking, this is going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
Because if something goes wrong, guess what? It's everybody pointing fingers at each other.
Yeah.
Whereas I tell them, if something goes wrong, you've only got one finger to point to. Just try to find me. No, I'm just kidding.
Didn't those guys do that at the Super Bowl?
Oh, there was all kinds of.
There's a lot of finger pointing.
I think that's still going on.
I think so too. It's nobody's
fault. Is that you?
So, with these booths, what's the difference? Do I rent a booth? Do I buy one? Do I have multiple options? How do you advise people?
That's we do a lot of rentals right now, and I think part of it is it's a money saving. There are different accounting rules for rentals versus purchases.
Of course.
Purchase, you have to, you know, if it's over a certain amount, you have to depreciate it over a period of time. Rental, you can just write it off right there. So companies, we found in the last 5-6 years, really cautious about committing funds out in the future. So if they can do a rental, and then I tell them it's almost better to do a rental because then after 2 or 3 times, you can have a new booth. You rent it twice.
Mm-hmm.
Then you do a completely different one.
You're not stuck
for 5 years with the same booth because things change so much.
Where they can get bigger booths.
That's right. And, we hope that happens. But then they can also, because everything's so portable, we can then make stuff into components so they can take that 30-foot wall there, and we could take 10 feet of it, and we can use it for a 10-foot booth if they need it at some smaller show or whatever. So there's all kinds of flexibility involved.
What's the most interesting booth that you guys have ever made or seen? Because I know some of them are crazy.
We haven't had that. We did one with a major truck manufacturer, and they wanted this. It was the tractor part of the truck. The tractor is the part with the engine, you know, the tractor trailer part. And so we had it on water, so it looked like that the truck was actually just resting on water.
Oh, wow.
Course, then you had the logistics of what if somebody kicks a hole in the liner, and now we got, you know, how many gallons of water in the show floor. So, but that didn't happen. So
this wasn't the outdoor booth where it actually rained for.
No.
Where the truck actually was sitting on water.
This was planned. That's right. This was planned for water. Okay. That's right. And then you talk about show rules. You bring in a vehicle into an exhibit hall, and now you have some show rules because the battery has to be disconnected. You have to drain the fuel out of it because of fire regulations. It just goes. Yeah, you know, you did auto shows.
Logistics. Yeah. Yes. You got those prototype cars that also have extra rules.
Yep, there's but rental is popular, and
you think that's the kind of the current trend, what people are kind of going to just because it's cheaper and everything, right?
Well,
now?
It's if they're going to use it, rental is about just on the component side. Rental's about one-third, about one-third the cost. So if you're going to do it 3 times, people say, "Well, I'll just buy it." But then you've got an old booth you've used 3 times, and if you only go to a couple shows, especially a couple big shows a year, people are going to see the same booth and they'll go, "Oh, we're bored with that booth." I mean, it's Mm-hmm. People's attention spans are just incredible. I'm, you know, we kind of talked earlier about the texting thing, and I've got a young son, and he won't even watch a television show anymore. He's into the 2 and 3 minute YouTube segments, and yes. I'm going, I thought I had a short attention span.
If it's 3 minutes, it's too long.
Yeah.
it's true. You have that when you make a video or any sort of important, you know, you want to put something out there on video, you have to keep it, you know, 2.5
short
minutes, 3 minutes. Yeah.
Yep.
It reminds me back in the old days when rock music used to be 2 and 3 minutes long.
Short and sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was it.
That
was
unless it's Freebird.
Journey.
Yeah. All right. So Tim, where do you see your, you know, taking Vector Displays in the future? Where are you trying to go with it?
Well, we're pretty much doing what we want to do. You know, like any business, you want to do more and do it better. But the economy has been it's been good to us in that we have not had to, and this may sound bad in one respect, but because of the economy, we have not had to put on a bunch of employees. There are many freelance people out there. They
so
may not
true.
Want to
mm-hmm.
be freelance, mm-hmm. but yes. they're freelance. Like, for example, I can't justify having a graphic designer sitting in an office 40
oh, yeah.
hours a week, 50 mm-hmm. weeks a year, because, first of all, I probably can't keep them busy. And secondly, all of the projects don't come in. Like once in a while, mm-hmm. you'll have 10 projects and you'll have 0 projects.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that person's either working 100 hours a week, mm-hmm. and you kind of wonder how creative can you be working 100
Definitely.
Hours a week, and then having to get the drawings out and make changes and all these kinds of things. And so that helps us with labor because, you know, we don't always have a show in Atlanta, so I can't keep people sitting around waiting for a show to come
yep.
to Atlanta mm-hmm. or Vegas or any other city. So mm-hmm. luckily we can tap in all over the country, all over the world for that matter. I had a Chinese contact through LinkedIn today, and this person wants to have his companies in China that he deals with start coming over here so we can work together. I've got companies that go to China. That's happening more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Companies are looking at the global. China is just unreal,
mm-hmm.
that potential there. So I think that's where it's going to be is the – and the virtualness of it. I still I don't meet probably 90% of my customers because if they're
wow.
coming into Vegas for a show, mm-hmm. I don't have to be there. What am I going to do? You know, everything's taken care of by the time the show starts.
Yeah.
I'm not putting up the booth, you know, so or I'm not making sure. I mean, you know, I obviously make sure everything's there, but I'm not the one who does the printing and I'm not the one who drives the truck to get it there. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff. So that's probably going to continue with the virtual contacts throughout the world and doing business virtually throughout
mm-hmm.
the world.
So that's the future.
And face-to-face is still here. I'm not, you know, a shill for the trade show industry, but people sooner or later want to see who they do business with, and they want to touch and feel products and services and the people behind them. So even though they say, well, you know, like after 9/11, what that's been
11 years ago.
Yeah, 11 and a half years ago.
Yeah.
The people, you know, trade shows are dead. Well, after a couple of years, they pretty much came back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're not, we don't have the attendance like we did in the late 1990s when computers were going still wacko and you had your dot-com boom and you didn't have Y2K yet and all that kind of stuff. But I don't think those days are ever going to come back because even now somebody says to me, hi, we have a software product and we've rented a 30-foot by 30-foot booth at the show. And
wow.
I'm going, what are you going to do?
Product.
Yeah, what are you going to do? How many monitors can you have for people to test out the software?
Dancers.
Well, yeah.
Projection screen.
And yeah. So, you know, sometimes you just don't need to. You don't need a big booth. You know, you don't need a double-decker 100 by 100 to show something.
But
so,
if they want it, you're more than happy to build it for them.
Definitely. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, can you give us your contact information, how people can reach out to you?
Yes, I'm Tim, and I'm not the only Tim there. I'm the only Tim in Atlanta, but I'm Tim, and it's at vectordisplays.com,
okay.
and the website is vectordisplays, with an S, .com, vector, V-E-C-T-O-R, displays.com. And we're on Google Plus and Twitter, and I'm on LinkedIn, a couple of us are, mm-hmm. and Facebook, and whatever the next social media
Tweet.
Outlet, we're, yeah, we're, yeah, we have, I have a personal one and we have a business account. Yes, so we do that. it's all part of one thing I've noticed about, you know, people always ask me because they know I'm somewhat active in the social media, and they'll say, Tim, you know, is it worth it to get involved with social media? And I'll go, well, you know, I can't point and say we've made X
this
dollars
customer came
because,
yeah.
yes, because yeah. of that. But what I have found is we don't get as many reference checks as we used to, because before somebody called from Germany and they'd go, well, send us a list of your customers. But now when I send out, if I send an email, especially the first time, I've got five or six things listed. I'll mm-hmm. list this as soon as I get the lead. The link to this and have that in my signature. And so they see all these things. We're in the top 100 of meetings and planners for 2013, and we got that back in 2012. I don't know how the heck they knew in 2013 what we were going to be doing. But anyway, but those are the kinds of things. And so therefore, they don't say, oh, send us three or five references. They'll just, they don't even ask. I'm kind of going, wow. You know,
people are savvy. They're doing their research now before they spend their money. That's the best client, I think.
Yeah.
It's already looked at you and seen that you have a great track record. Because I follow you on LinkedIn. You always post content that's, I always follow it. I always see what you have going
on.
Do
I want to do business with this guy?
it's part of that. It's part of it. And, for example, I had something came up yesterday afternoon after we linked in on or I guess we've been linked in, but we got involved on other things on the group. And it's an event thing. And so, you know, I'm going to talk to you and find out, you know, what their needs are. Once I find those out, I hope to meet with them this afternoon, and then we can get together. And because I don't do that part of it. I can, theoretically, but I don't want to get into making sure there are 300 suppers at, you know, XYZ
Too much stress.
You can leave that to me.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
right. Well, that's right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can do everything, but is it worth the trouble with the learning curve? And
not
so anyway.
So is there anything we didn't touch on today, Tony, Tim? Anything we didn't mention that you guys want to just get out there?
I think you guys have covered it all. And if we don't, if we think of something after we leave here, we'll just go on your Twitter account.
Oh, yeah, and just bash me. He'll manage it. So you can actually just tweet from my account. So that'll help me out there. But Jessica,
what's your password again?
Jessica, do you have anything to talk about? I know you have, what's it called? It's the coolest name, Ventrepreneurs?
Yes, I have.
That's so cool.
I started a group of Ventrepreneurs. I wanted to have more engagement with event planners and the vendors that are participating in the events, and not only event planners, not only venues, but across the board, just kind of a educational space for all of us that are in events, and we can share our, you know, experiences and what we're working on now. And I look forward to working with both Tony and Tim on working with Ventrepreneurs. Would be great. Yep,
that'd be great.
That'd be awesome. That sounds great.
That's pretty exciting, Jessica. You thought of a very good, catchy name.
Thank you. I know.
It's hard to say. I can read it. But
she must have a really good mentor.
It's spelled the same as entrepreneur, just with events on the beginning.
Yeah. I think it's great. That is very creative.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you guys for coming on. This is a great first show.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I'm Kevin Finn for Taylor Kelly and Jessica Park and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Meeting Pros.
Thank you.